It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, Southern Colorado's only show dedicated to college athletics, University of Fish.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
Good morning. Welcome to the University of Fish. You are not tardy. The clock is not slow. It is 7 o'clock. So that must mean it's time for the University of Fish. I am the professor, Tim Fisher. We're in that weird part of the year right now. We just finished up the College World Series, so all the college championships have been decided for the last school year, so we've got a couple months until we start getting back into college football. And I know that I am ready. We're like 9 weeks away from getting into college football, and we're going to jam-pack that with as much stuff as we can get you here on the University of Fish between now and the start of college football, because once we get there, we know you're going to have Fish's Picks back, because we'll have our guest picker each week. And I want to offer you the opportunity to be a guest picker this year. And I want to offer you the chance to be a part of the show this morning. We're going to run down who won all the major championships in college sports this year. If you have a memory from college sports this past year, or an opinion, or got a question for the professor, you can bring it to the classroom this morning. All you got to do is call 522-9872. That's 522-EXTRA. For those that are listening outside of the Colorado Springs area, and I know you're there because I hear from you, at 719-522-9872, 522-EXTRA, and that's no E on extra, it's just X-T-R-A. Just want to make sure so you're calling the right number, not calling and waking somebody up this morning trying to get a hold of the professor. Go, hey, professor, and it's some old lady. We don't want to do that to her this morning, so give us a call, 522-EXTRA. That's 522-9872. I've said the phone number enough for right now. Want to see those lines lighting up to hear from all the people in the classroom this morning. But let's look at what happened this year in college sports. Of course, in football, we had Clemson beating Alabama. Classic game. Everybody had the thought that, no, Clemson's not going to beat Alabama. No one could beat Alabama. But Deshaun Watson and the Clemson Tigers, Dabo Swinney, and I think the most important part of that was Brett Venables, who I'm trying to get into the classroom before college football season starts. I have some friends that have connections with him. We'll see if we can get the defensive coordinator for the Clemson Tigers into the classroom before college football season starts. But the Clemson Tigers beating the Alabama Crimson Tide in the college football playoff championship. It was a great game. Deshaun Watson came to play in the fourth quarter, unlike the year before when Alabama beat Clemson. So Clemson getting that retribution that they missed out on the year before. In basketball, we had a great game between North Carolina and Gonzaga. I think a lot of this had to come down to the officials because there were some horrible calls down low, especially on Zach Collins, the freshman who's already entered in the NBA now. And we talked with Eden Lossie, who a former reporter here on the University of Fish. She is now writing for Sports Illustrated, so already getting that good alumni class working here as well. In baseball, we know that just this past Tuesday night that got beat by the Florida Gators. All SEC College World Series Final Championship Series. It was a great game. Once again, determined by the umpires, the referees, the officials, whatever you want to call them, depending on the sport. They should not be a part of the game. Let these kids play the game. We had problems there. A bad call at second base, nullifying a run for LSU. But congratulations to the Florida Gators getting their first ever baseball championship. We'll be talking about that in the next segment. We'll be joined once again by Matt Martell, a writer for MLB.com. You're going, wait, that's professional sports. Why are we talking to him? Because he's also a writer for the Penn State Collegian. He is a college student who just has a job writing for MLB.com. He'll be joining us in this next segment to talk about how Florida won the College World Series. In softball, just a few weeks ago, the Oklahoma Sooners beating Florida. Florida showing up once again in these championships. Florida had a great season in all sports, a great school year for them. The Gators did very well in basketball. Colorado Springs' own Canyon Berry, one of the key players on that Florida basketball team, but they got beat in softball by the Oklahoma Sooners after that epic 17-inning game one of the championship series, Oklahoma coming on to win in the second game. In women's basketball, yes, the Giant died. Connecticut getting beat by Mississippi State in the semifinals, so that set up an all-SEC final in women's basketball, and South Carolina, the Lady Gamecocks, ended up winning the championship there. South Carolina, one of the few teams that had a chance to win men's and women's basketball. They were both in the Final Four, but the women eking it out against Mississippi State to win women's college basketball. And in hockey, a local team. Yes, the DU Pioneers winning another national championship on the ice in the Frozen Four. So congratulations to the Pioneers getting their championship. Men's golf, you know you're going to hear this name a couple more times. That would be the University of Oklahoma. Oklahoma has more team championships this past school year than any other school. They have more in the past 2 years. They've got 7 team championships in the past 2 years. 4 alone in this in the 2016-2017 school year. So congratulations, men of Oklahoma, winning golf. In soccer, the Stanford Cardinal. Stanford, who always does very well in the spring sports, whether it be swimming, water polo. Yes, water polo is a collegiate sport, but Stanford always does very well in the spring sports. Not too bad in the fall sports as well, because you know, Stanford's had a good basketball team over the years. And then, of course, we know that the Stanford Cardinal can play some football as well. Of course, with our own Christian McCaffrey from up in Castle Pines, now a member of the Carolina Panthers, who was a Heisman finalist for 2 years. He had a great career there. I hope he has a great career with the Carolina Panthers as well. But Stanford winning soccer. In women's soccer, another California team, Southern California, the USC Lady Trojans winning women's soccer. In men's and women's gymnastics, I'll just bunch them together. That was the University of Oklahoma winning both those titles. The men repeating. They've won the past 3 years, and the women repeating. They won the year before. So there, I told you Oklahoma's won 7. 6 of those were repeat champions, the only one being new, men's golf. And in lacrosse, you have the same team winning in both men's and women's lacrosse. That was the University of Maryland Terrapins. And I guarantee you they're wearing Under Armour gear because, well, of course, the founder and the CEO of Under Armour, a Maryland grad. That's why they have those funky helmets that they wear there at University of Maryland. In track and field, another repeat winner for a school, that would be Florida. So they got baseball and track. And in women's track, the University of Oregon. They were the host for both men's and women's outdoor track this past season, and they won on the women's side. So there you've got the champions from this past year in the major sports and a lot of the spring sports. Yes, I did leave some out. I didn't talk about cross country. I didn't talk about, like I said, water polo, and I'm sure there was women's field hockey that I didn't touch on. But if I had to break down the most surprising champions of this past year, Clemson's got to be at the top of the list. If you don't agree with me, give me a call, 522-9872. That's 522-EXTRA. I've heard from people in the classroom that they said, hey, professor, we want to ask you a question. And so I'm giving you that opportunity today. Give me a call, 522-9872, 522-EXTRA. But the Clemson Tigers beating the Alabama Crimson Tide, I talked about how Deshaun Watson came on in the fourth quarter and just led that team to victory. When Deshaun Watson came on the campus at Clemson, he said he wanted an undefeated season. Got that. Got undefeated regular season. Did lose in the championship season last year. But he also wanted a Heisman Trophy. Got close. And then he also wanted the national championship. He got that. And so, once again, congratulations to Clemson Tigers. you see them every year, and they get Clemsoned, which is, you know, they're playing a team that they should just wipe up, whether it be a North Carolina State, a South Carolina, a Vanderbilt, and they end up losing. That happened this year during the season, but then they came on when they had to, and Dabo Swinney was not going to let that team lose. In basketball, you know, everybody figured North Carolina would be there. Everybody figured they would. They had that kind of drop off there at the beginning of the ACC season, but then they came on strong through the ACC tournament and obviously the NCAA tournament because they ended up winning the whole thing. But with Florida winning the baseball championship, which we'll be getting into more here in just a few minutes with Matt Martell, with Florida winning, I did not have them in the championship series. Well, I did have them, but I figured LSU would just wipe them up because I thought the LSU-Oregon State winner would end up winning the College World Series, and that was not the case because the Florida Gators just did what they had to do through the two-game series and then won the national championship. Hockey, well, Denver, you know, when you're looking at the teams that were in the Frozen Four, DU, yes, they are a traditional power when it comes to hockey. I didn't really see them winning the championship this year. I figured that I'd go to a North Dakota State, to a Harvard. But the DU Pioneers playing it tough on the ice, doing what they had to do to win the Frozen Four. So those are my most, I would say, surprising results when it comes to college sports this past year. What's going to happen this next year? That's the question. Who's going to be our favorites in college football? Who's going to take it in basketball? With all the one and dones, you never know what's going to happen in the world of college basketball, but you're going to find out here on the University of Fish. We'll make those predictions as we get closer to the season. We're going to start breaking down the college football season here in the next few weeks as well. I'll give you conference previews. I'll give you national previews as well. But when we come back, we're going back to Tuesday, the College World Series. Matt Martell will be joining us in just a few minutes right here on the University of Fish. Phone lines are open, 522-9872, 522-EXTRA, X-T-R-A. You're listening to University of Fish right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This could do it on the ground to second. And the Gators get their first College World Series championship. And they dogpile at the mound at TD Ameritrade.
Sweeping the series and becoming the national champions again for the first time in program history. They now join Michigan, UCLA, and Ohio State as the only four schools to win a national title in baseball, basketball, and football.
That is very impressive. One of the four schools, that being Michigan, Ohio State, and Southern California UCLA, to win baseball, basketball, and football. Someone who knows a little bit about, well, most of those sports. I don't know how. Matt, how much do you know about basketball?
I know a good amount. I covered the Penn State and Nittany Lion basketball team my sophomore year, so I know a little bit.
Okay, but so we're joined with Matt Martell here on the University of Fish. We heard Matt last week. We heard Matt during the spring season, right after the spring game for Penn State. And now, Matt, when we were talking last week, we figured that LSU would just walk over whoever they had to play in the championship series. Didn't happen, did it?
No, it didn't.
So what did you think at Florida did, other than what the umpires helped them do, what did you think Florida did to win the championship?
Florida played really good defense. You know, they had a few good plays out in center field, especially following the umpire ruled double play on the interference call that really kept the game in check, regardless of whether the double play was called or not called. I mean, that was only one run, and Florida was up 2-1 at the time if the run didn't come off the board. So I think the defense and pitching played a huge role in Florida's success in shutting down a very good LSU team.
Now let's talk about how LSU got there, because they had to beat Oregon State to get there. And then Florida, I mean, we know had to beat TCU. What helped them? What helped both those teams get to the championship series?
Well, Florida's pitching was above and beyond the best in the College World Series. It looked to me like it. Fido was unhittable in the lead up against TCU to get there, and LSU just took advantage of Oregon State's. Their strategy game. Oregon State tried to bunt, tried to hit and run, tried to use a little bit of small ball to get on, and LSU kind of stopped the strategy game from Oregon State.
We really haven't seen small ball work for anybody since the Royals won the World Series. Yes, it's a strategy. It works great in softball, but not so much in baseball, does it?
No, it doesn't, and that's a lot of the thing that Sabermetrics is trying to prove is that bunting doesn't always work, rarely works, in high-level competitive baseball. Getting him over, getting him in is not, you know, doesn't have a high probability of getting runs in to the same extent as it is, you know, leaving the guy on first base and not sacrificing an out. Sabermetrics says don't sacrifice an out. To get a guy to second base when you still have that out, you can get him over a little bit better and you have a better chance of scoring.
Because I always think if the ball goes over the fence, it's a whole lot better than trying to put it right in front of the plate.
Absolutely.
It just makes sense to me. If you can run, you have a better chance of scoring than if you're just trying to move someone 90 feet. But, now with Florida winning, which of the, let's go with the final four teams that were in the College World Series. Do you see any of them making a run back to the College World Series next year? I know that I think LSU probably will because LSU is always stacked. And we know they've got some great signees coming in as well. But who of those four do you think has the most realistic chance of getting back in or do all four?
I think all four do. I think all four are very good programs. Even Florida had never won before, but they're a historic program. I think I saw that they've won the SEC title 13 times, been to the College World Series 11 times. They didn't win before this year, the whole thing, but they're a storied franchise, or school, not franchise, in college baseball. Same with LSU, as you said, they're back every year. TCU is the number one ranked team coming into this year. They always have a good program. And Oregon State's been there quite a few times as well, and where they play factors into it that they're not in the highly competitive SEC. I think that all four teams could be back next year easily.
Now, let's talk Oregon State for a second. With everything that happened during the postseason and a certain person not getting drafted, does Luke Heimlich show up for a senior year?
I think it would be hard for Oregon State to bring him back. I know he left on his own terms, but I think with everything going on, it would be a big distraction. It does not shine a good light on the school to bring him back. I don't think it would be smart.
Okay, now we're
on either party's terms.
No, I don't think so either. I don't.
And I think he's proved enough on the field that if he wants to keep his baseball career going, a professional team could sign him undrafted.
They could sign him undrafted, but I think he's going to have to go the independent A-ball route is what I'm thinking.
Right? Oh, yes, absolutely.
He's going to have to prove himself an independent ball before he ever gets, before a big league team goes, let's bring him on. We're not talking like football where the Cincinnati Bengals have this roster of felons. We're not talking, basketball where you see it as well. Baseball is usually a pretty clean sport. You don't hear a whole lot of people in legal problems in baseball, probably because there's not as much downtime as there is in football because you're always involved. Because when you're not playing baseball during the season, you're playing fall ball and winter ball, whether you're in, the Dominican Republic or wherever. Baseball is a year-round thing because those are skills that you have to keep sharp. Because for football, all you do is make sure you're in the weight room. Baseball, you have to keep your body conditioned and have to keep your skills sharp. We're going to transition out of baseball real quick because you do ride for the Penn State. Is it the Collegian, correct?
Yes.
Okay, the Penn State Collegian. We're going to, our next segment, we're going to be talking about a Heisman flashback, the history of the award and everything. There's a possibility that the Penn State Nittany Lions have two people who could be in consideration for the trophy this coming year. I mean, because before the trophy was even awarded to Lamar Jackson this past December, Trace McSorley was ranked the number five quarterback with a Heisman chance. And then you have a running back with Saquon Barkley. Are either one of those chances realistic?
Yes, I do. I think they both are realistic. I say the better player is Saquon Barkley. I think he's the best running back in the country, and Sports Illustrated just came out with their top 100 players rankings. They had him as the fifth best player in the country overall, the best running back. I agree with that. I think what it's going to depend on is the number of touches he gets. If Penn State wants to limit his touches because they have a dynamic passer and in Trace McSorley, they might limit Barkley's rushes, and that would hurt him as far as putting up big numbers in the passing game, as far as receiving and rushing as well. But I think he's the better player of the two. And I think both of them will be in consideration for sure.
Well, when you're thinking about Trace McSorley, would you put him in the top five in the country of quarterbacks? Because you have two Heisman finalists. We have a Heisman winner and a Heisman finalist both coming back in Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield. And then you have Josh Rosen, who at some point is going to come, is going to show the promise that he had his the first couple games of his freshman year. You've got the kid at USC. His name's escaping me right now.
Sam Darnold, yep.
Yeah, Darnold had a great season last year. He's back this year. So there's four right there. Would you put McSorley next?
I would. And I think what helps him is the team around him. I think as far as performance numbers this year, he'll be right up there in the top five because he's got the running game to work off of. He's got Mike Gesicki, who's proved himself last year as a very reliable target at tight end. He's got a few receivers that are coming into their own as well, even after Chris Godwin left. He's got the package around him. The offensive line will have another year of experience now that he'll put up top five quarterback numbers. Whether he's the top five talent at quarterback is a different story.
So we're
that's too hard to tell right now because I've only seen him 1 year.
Yeah.
But the potential's there. What it's going to be is the arm strength. He was great on the deep ball last year, but there are a lot of times where it looked like the receiver bailed it out on a couple of bad thrown deep balls. But he was great throwing deep last year. It's just going to be whether he can keep that up.
So, I mean, because I have a hard time putting him in the top two in the Big Ten. Because you got the ninth year senior, it seems like, at Ohio State with JT Barrett. And I think that Wilton Spaeth, with another year of Harbaugh, Spaeth's going to have a great year. And so, I mean, I could probably put him at 2 or 2A because I think those are the top three quarterbacks coming back in the Big Ten. But, I mean, because JT Barrett's going to get a lot more Heisman love and a lot more national love than McSorley, even though McSorley beat JT last year.
Yes.
It's going to take, I think, for McSorley to get that love, it's going to take another big win like that, and they've got that gauntlet of three games in a row where they're playing Michigan, Michigan State, and Ohio State. I think that's going to make or break anything McSorley does this year.
Yes, yeah, no, that's true. The one thing with Wilton Spaeth is that he's playing with a Michigan team that really doesn't have a lot coming back. And that I'm not sure is going to – I mean, I think this will be a big development year for him. I mean, don't forget he was only a freshman last year, and that's, you know. So this is a big stepping stone. I don't know he'll put up the numbers. JT Barrett's always tough. I mean, because he's somebody that is, you know, he's a bulldog. He's a guy that can run. He'll put his head down, get up five extra yards upfield. He can throw the ball pretty well. I mean, he's a great quarterback, and he could be in that number five slot as well.
You know, here in a, like, not this season, but the next season, you're going to be dealing with a local product from here in the Colorado area, and that's going to be Dylan McCaffrey, because I don't, because I think that Dylan is dynamic enough that no matter what kind of year, unless fate just goes lights out this year, I think Dylan McCaffrey will probably be a redshirt freshman starter there at Michigan.
You do?
I do. I do. Well, look at the, first off, look at his lineage. You know, his dad played NFL football. His brother is now in NFL football. Got another brother that's playing college ball. The genes are there. The genes are there, and I've seen him play in high school ball this past year, and the kid can light it up. But we're running short on time. Matt, I want to thank you once again for joining us. We'll be talking to you as we get closer to college football season, because you're going to help me break down the Big Ten, because you know the Big Ten just as well as anybody, because you're right there in the heart of it. Matt Martell, thanks for joining us here on the University of Fish, a writer for MLB.com, and I'm going to call him now an adjunct professor here on the University of Fish, because he has been our most frequent guest here. Matt, have a great day.
Thanks. You too, Tim.
You're listening to University of Fish. We'll be right back. Phone lines open, 522-9872, 522-EXTRA, right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. I am the Professor Tim Fisher. Phone lines are open this morning. I've heard from the classroom that you want to make your voice heard. This is your chance, 522-9872, 522-XTRA, here on Extra Sports 1300. Now, what we're going to do between now and the start of the college football season, we're going to have Heisman flashbacks.
It's time for a history lesson with the professor. Here's a Heisman flashback.
The Heisman Trophy, it represents the pinnacle of college football. Of the more than 5 million men who have played this sport, only 80 have known the pride of lifting this trophy. But the Heisman Trophy also represents a bond and a brotherhood.
The most prestigious honor in college football, given to a player who epitomizes great ability combined with diligence, perseverance, and hard work.
The two dumbest awards in American sports are, number one, the NBA Coach of the Year. The second dumbest is the Heisman. It's why I don't watch the ceremony, and I don't care about it, and I won't watch Louisville Clemson for that. I'll watch it to see if one clubs the other and has a chance to win the championship. Going back to the say it out loud theory, the Heisman is now only winnable by quarterback and running back. The voting is painfully parochial, where Southern media vote for their guy, Western media vote for their guy. You have to mostly play at one of 12 traditional powers, or you can't get on TV at the end of the year or play in a conference championship where, you know, the voters will see you, where 15% of the voters vote before the conference championship games, meaning potentially the last big three games you play in as a collegiate star, none of them count. Dan Le Batard's father has a Heisman vote. He's a wonderful man. If he's got a vote for an award, it's probably a little bit of a shtick. The ceremony itself is unbelievably uncomfortable. It feels like it was directed by Woodrow Wilson. Sweaty kids in suits that are often ill-fitting, under hot TV lights, staring at old men from the New York Athletic Club on an embalming fluid IV. This is the worst next to NBA Coach of the Year award in sports in America.
And it's not the second worst trophy. I never really ever agree with Colin Cowherd. I think he's been a hack the whole time. All he does is try to stir up controversy. But the Heisman Trophy, you know, had been given away 81 times now. That was the clip from the beginning of the ceremony this past year. But what we're going to do here over the next few weeks is we're going to have Heisman winners talk to you and talk to the professor about their year when they won. I know we got Billy Sims coming in a couple of weeks, won the 1978 Heisman Trophy. We're going to be trying to talk to Eric Crouch, who won for the University of Nebraska. Sadly, we cannot talk to our the one Colorado player, because we did lose him this past year. Lost two Heisman winners this past year, one by natural causes, and the other, well, we know about Rashawn Salaam. We're not going to get into that. A whole sad story there. But we're going to open it up to you right now. We're going to go to Wilson. Wilson, you're on the University of Fish. How you doing today? Okay, we're not going to go to Wilson, but hey, we got a phone call. So thanks, Wilson. You're welcome anytime on the University of Fish. See, we do not screen our calls for content. I do ask that you are polite, which Wilson obviously did not want to be this morning, but that's okay, because sometimes you do have those disruptive students in a classroom. So back to talking about the Heisman. You know, it began in 1935 with the Downtown Athletic Club from New York City, and they to recognize the best player. Back then, it was east of the Mississippi. Why they left out the West Coast schools, I don't know. But then that's one thing I do agree with on Colin Cowherd right there, is that it does turn into a regional award. You haven't seen anyone other than a quarterback or a running back win it in years. I mean, you have to think back to when, like, Charles Woodson won it, back when Desmond Howard won it, but they won it on the strengths of their return game. But now, for many years, it was just east of the Mississippi. And at the University of Chicago, first winner, Jay Berwanger, he was later drafted by the Eagles, but decided not to play. He wanted to go have a business career instead. In 1936, the athletic director of the Downtown Athletic Club, football pioneer John Heisman, he died, and that's when they renamed the trophy in his honor. Larry Kelly was the first winner to win the actual Heisman Trophy, and it became a nationwide thing soon after that. And then with the new name, players west of the Mississippi, they became eligible. And the first player from the Western United States was not selected until 1938. Only one has won it twice. And, of course, that being Ohio State's running back, Archie Griffin, who won it twice in the mid-70s. There have been a lot of people who've had an opportunity to win it twice. Right now, we have an opportunity for someone to win it twice. That's Lamar Jackson. If he can do what he did this past year, he'll be in the running once again. Billy Sims, who I talked about, came back. He won it his junior year. Came in second his senior year. Jason White from Oklahoma won it his junior year, had a chance to win it again. You don't see a lot of those because it's hard to maintain that same excellence that wins you the trophy. But as I said, we're going to take a look over the next few weeks of who won. And I told you that we're working on Eric Crouch. We're working on Billy Sims. Working on Herschel Walker. I've been talking with Doug Flutie's people, because we all know that Doug Flutie won it on that pretty much the Flutie to Phelan pass against Miami when Boston College beat the Miami Hurricanes. And then Doug Flutie has been riding that. Well, he was a very talented player. Doug Flutie, a great guy, very talented player, but pretty much been riding that Hail Mary that he threw against Miami his whole career. You know, he was actually a teammate of another Heisman winner, Herschel Walker, who I just talked about, when they played for the New Jersey Generals back in the USFL. How many people actually remember the USFL? I mean, it was a fun league. I mean, Jim Kelly got his start there. Warren Moon. You had some great players some NFL Hall of Famers that started off in the USFL, but... And then we'll also be talking, like I said, Eric Crouch, working on Herschel Walker. I'm even trying to get you Johnny Manziel. That's right, Johnny Football, who wants to make an NFL comeback. I've been talking with his agent. He's not real sure how much media he wants to do right now because, let's be honest, the media has not been real kind to Johnny Manziel. But then you think about all the other players. Like I say, it's going to be hard to get a Cam Newton because, you know, he's in the midst of OTAs. He's doing all his stuff because all the current players, it's going to be a little tougher to get. It's going to be easier to get the Heisman Trophy winners that have already been out of football and are doing things. We're going to work our connections with ESPN, see if we can get you a Desmond Howard, see if we can get you a Charles Woodson. And there's a lot of great players out there that have won this award. And but I want to talk right now about some of the ones you never hear about. You know, like I said, the Jay Berwangers from Chicago, Larry Kelly from Yale, who was an end. Back then, they didn't call him a tight end, didn't call him a receiver. They just played at the end of the line, so they were an end. Yale winning it back-to-back years because the next one went to Clint Frank, a halfback from Yale. But then you get into some of the names that, you know, going, hey, wait, I know that name, even if it's because another award's named for him, like the Davey O'Brien Award. Davey O'Brien, the quarterback from TCU, he only got 30% of the vote, but that was enough. Niall Kinnick, you've heard that name in history. That'd be the Iowa halfback and quarterback. And then Tom Harmon from Michigan. You may not know the name Tom Harmon, but you've heard of his son, Mark Harmon, of course, from that being Jethro from NCIS. And then, but I like to think of him from back in summer school. If you remember the movie Summer School, loved that movie. It was a great movie. The driver's ed teacher having to teach summer school. But then you have people like Angelo Bertelli, the quarterback from Notre Dame, Doc Blanchard. Everybody knows Doc Blanchard's name, the fullback from Army. Glenn Davis won it the next year because Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis in that backfield for the Army Black Knights were just a force to deal with. Then you have Johnny Lujack from Notre Dame. Then another trophy who's named after someone, the Doak Walker Award, the halfback from SMU. He won it back in 1948. You had a punter. He was also a halfback, but Vic Janowitz from Ohio State. 1952, Billy Vessels, a halfback from Oklahoma. And then you get in the names like Paul Hornung, the cornerback from Notre Dame. John David Crow, one of the best running backs that Texas A&M has ever seen. Billy Cannon from LSU. Billy Cannon was a god in Louisiana back in the late 50s. Roger Staubach, you know, I love it when these military academies get someone that is Heisman worthy. And it's been a long time. Yeah, you could say that Keenan Reynolds from a couple years ago at Navy was Heisman worthy. But it's great when you see these young men who are going to go on and defend our country as a Heisman finalist or a Heisman winner. Roger Staubach, of course, the NFL Hall of Famer with the Dallas Cowboys, is now also a very successful businessman in the Dallas area with Staubach Properties. He's a big real estate developer in the Dallas area. But there's been lots of great Heisman winners. We're going to be bringing them to you between now and the start of college football season. We're also going to be start breaking down the college football season that's coming up. Phone lines are still open. Hopefully you're a little better caller than Wilson was. 522-9872. That's 522-EXTRA, X-T-R-A. We got a holiday coming up. We're going to be talking about it a little bit in Professor Fish's lecture right after the break, right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Drive Time Sports.
Aqib Talib joins us live and in person. I am looking at flights to Minneapolis sometime in early February. Do you plan on being there at the same time, maybe playing some football?
I do, man. But your plans mean nothing without the work, man. So right now we just focus on putting this work in so we can be there.
Drive Time Sports. Weekday afternoons 3 to 6 on Extra Sports 1300. Come experience the thrill of chivalrous knights and brave steeds at the Colorado Renaissance Fair in Larkspur. Joust, the Knights of the Noble Cause, features the finest in equestrian skills in combat jousting. These noble knights prove that chivalry lives and heroes walk among us. See Joust, the Knights of the Noble Cause, weekends through July 30th at the Colorado Renaissance Fair in Larkspur. For more information, log on to extrasports1300.com and catch Joust Center on Drive Time Sports weekdays on Extra Sports 1300. Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
Welcome back to the University of Fish. I am the Professor Tim Fisher. Now, we've got a holiday coming up. And you look at the current tone and the current culture on campuses around this country, how we no longer have a nationalist and a America First view of things. everybody going, oh, the flag is oppressive, this is oppressive, that's oppressive. But it's a holiday coming up, and so we need to reflect on that as well. And so, an alumnus, because I'm talking about one person, Derek Wilburn, joined us last week. We were talking about transgenders in college sports, wrote an article this week on why you must refuse to celebrate the 4th of July this year. Now, before you get all crazy on me going, what? Why shouldn't we celebrate the 4th of July? Because, and this is what he wrote, the 4th of July is not a holiday any more than the 5th of July is a holiday. They're dates on a calendar. The holiday we celebrate, which falls on the 4th day of every July, is America's Independence Day. Independence Day is the holiday, yet over the years, we've become conditioned to drop the name and instead refer to the date. Why? We say happy 4th as if the 4th is a holiday without really thinking much about it. Is it small? Yeah. Is it subtle? Yeah, no question. But is it petty? Absolutely not. We live in a nation wherein our previous leadership changed the oath of allegiance to that legal immigrants to our nation must take to so as to exclude the former requirement to pledge to defend America. For the past 8-9 years, our government apologized for our nation's behavior and called America arrogant. And an aside rule there, you're seeing this on college campuses where, oh no, it's not about America, it's about these people that are oppressed over here. We got to worry about what's going on here first. And then so, America, a nation responsible for bringing freedom and liberty to untold innumerable millions around the globe and having done so at the cost of our own blood. What do we now see playing out on the streets of our nation, also on our campuses? Millions of Americans view our sense of as a delusion of imperialistic grandeur, and 8 years of leadership by those of a like mind have emboldened them. You got all the Antifa punks, the Black Lives Matter haters, all the people that wear the little pink hats, and others making a mockery of and burning our flag, holding signs that declaring America was never great. And America is great. It's a country where we can enjoy college sports on a weekend, come together without worrying about protests. That's the world we used to live in. And those signs view our nation not as the solution, but the source of the world's problems, both today and historically. These and other America-hating globalists would love to see certain memories fade, certain attitudes destroyed, certain practices and pillars of nationalistic pride torn down. Practices such as standing hand over heart for the national anthem prior to sporting events, and such as the celebration of America's independence and subsequent rise to become the greatest superpower of the earth. I think a lot of this, a lot of the anti-American sentiment that we see on our campuses, I have to throw it back to Colin Kaepernick. I hate to lay it on one person. Yeah, I know it goes back to, you know, the whole Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Arizona, all that. But when Colin Kaepernick took what he called a stand, even though he's kneeling, when he took that stand, it emboldened these people on our campuses to go, wait, I'm going to protest too. You saw it on college campuses with people not kneeling for the national anthem. And then that emboldened people on the campus as well. And it's something we have to see torn down. They'd love to see us forevermore say and celebrate the 4th of July with little or no reference to exactly what we're celebrating on the date as possible. So let it all be about hot dogs, fireworks, you know, cookouts. They're putting great effort into having the words and memories scrubbed from our history books. Not taught in our colleges and universities, not even taught in our high schools, our junior highs, and our elementaries. It is getting to that point and drop from the public conscious. And these efforts, they're in many ways succeeding, but not on my watch. These are the words of Derek Wilburn. As Jack Nicholson's character, Marine Colonel Nathan Jessup, said in his iconic rant during one of my favorite movies, the courtroom scene of A Few Good Men, I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the very blanket of freedom I provide, and then, you know, at night, we will rage against the tearing down of our national traditions with our dying breath if necessary, including the celebration of America's independence. I'd like to challenge you patriots this year and every year from henceforth to begin referring to this holiday by its correct name, Independence Day. Many men and women, better than you and definitely better than me, sacrificed their all to gain this nation's independence from the crown. Let's honor their memory and the glorious gift of liberty they've bestowed on us, a gift that's still giving some 241 years later, by referring to this upcoming holiday by its proper name, America's Independence Day. After all, we don't say Merry 25th of December. Thank you, Derek Wilburn, for sharing that with us. Derek Wilburn, a great friend of the show, a great patriot in this country, and he's right here locally, a good friend of mine as well. And I want to challenge you, and I want to challenge every university student, whether you're here locally, whether you're anywhere in the world, to, you know what, stand up for America. It's America that makes us great. It's these people that have fought for our freedom, for that we can do and say whatever we want on college campuses, as long, of course, as it's within the realms of the law. Because we see a lot of this so-called protesting that turns violent. And we've seen it on the campus of Evergreen State University up in Washington. We've seen it at Cal Berkeley. We've seen, you know, kids blocking roads here in Colorado Springs at CC during their protests. We see it in Boulder. We see it all over the nation. So this week, enjoy the day that falls on Tuesday, which is the 4th of July, but celebrate Independence Day. That's enough of Fish's lecture for this week. Coming up, we've got the other football show. Ryan Kaufman and Chris Braden will be in here in a second talking to you all about soccer. Next week, another Heisman flashback. We're going to start breaking down the college football season right here on the University of Fish. I am the professor. Catch me on iTunes on Extra Sports 1300.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow. I don't feel tardy.